This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the September 26, 2022 For Your Benefit radio show. My name is Bob Lines. We're here today with Tom O'Rourke, attorney, longtime friend, and excellent presenter on income taxes.
Good to be here.
Good to see you, Tom. And Andrew's taking good care of us. And we're going to talk about recent developments in taxation and the Inflation Protection Act. Inflation Protection Act? What's that?
Well, when I read about it, it caught my eye because it supposedly had a lot of very dramatic changes in the tax law. Well, when I read it, and I read it more carefully, really didn't have all that many changes that are going to affect a lot of people, but it does have a number of changes in promoting energy efficiency. As both of us know, many times provisions in the tax code are there for reasons having nothing to do with taxes. Well, many of the tax changes that are part of the Inflation Reduction Act were designed to encourage energy-efficient investments. And there are a variety of credits. They've extended the credits for non-business property.
May I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
What's the difference between a credit and a tax deduction?
Oh, a credit is much, much better. A deduction, it reduces your taxable income. A credit is only applied after you determine how much tax you owe. And that credit offsets that tax dollar for dollar. Example, let's say you're in a 20% tax bracket. If you have a $100 deduction, it reduces your tax liability by 20% of that $100 deduction. If you have a $100 credit, that reduces your tax liability by $100.
So it's a much better.
It's much better.
But it's not as easy a tax deduction.
No, there are credits throughout the tax code, but there aren't that many. There are a lot of deductions. Most people are familiar with what they can deduct: their mortgage interest, their taxes, their charitable contributions. But credits are usually only for things that Congress specifically wants to encourage people to do.
Like the child, tax credit?
Yeah, child care credit is one of them. Child care credit is to, I guess Congress recognizes, costs a lot of money to raise children. And so a child care credit is certainly one of them.
Okay.
And in the Inflation Reduction Act, as I read through it, I tried to figure out what it had to do with taxes and what it had to do with inflation. And it really was, I think, a bill that was geared more towards promoting energy-efficient investments. I know they've extended a credit for energy improvements to your home. You put on new storm windows. You install a heat pump. In some cases, you get a credit for installing skylights or certain types of doors. And what those credits are, you can be certain that any vendor who's going to be trying to sell you new doors or new windows is going to make sure you're aware of that credit. But that basically were some of the major tax changes that were part of the Inflation Reduction Act. There was nothing that there were no new deductions allowed. There were no dramatic change in rates, primarily to promote energy efficiency. So.
And it appears that it was successful in doing so. I mean, I'm sure you find this with clients. I find it with clients sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you where I find it. In my garage, when I pull into park every day, the number of Teslas that are in there is ever increasing. And a Tesla, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, is an electronic vehicle. And Tesla is one that does if you buy a new Tesla, you qualify for a credit. That credit was extended, and in some places, in some situations, the amount of the credit is $4,000 a year. That's a big reduction in your tax liability. So, as you say, it's been effective. It's been very effective. Now, some people may have bought Tesla for reasons that have nothing to do with taxes, but I'm sure if you can buy a motor vehicle that you like and you want and also reduce taxes, that's an added benefit and certainly is an incentive. Like many of these other things, you know, we all need to have energy efficient doors and windows. Why? Because it'll hopefully reduce our electric bills. And if we get a tax benefit in addition to that, that just makes it an even sweeter investment.
Yeah. Very good.
So, no, the Inflation Reduction Act or bill, I forget what the title, Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 was significant. But as I'm sure you know, this is a time of year where a lot of announcements are made about upcoming changes in the tax law that are based primarily on inflation. And I noticed last week I got several in the daily newsletters that I subscribe to, there were a number of changes about cost of living changes to various factors in the tax law. And one that kind of surprised me and may surprise some of your listeners was the fairly dramatic increase in the amount individuals can contribute to the thrift plan. The amount that anybody under 50 will be able to contribute is going to increase from $20,500, which is what it is right now, to $22,500. So it's increased by $2,000. And for folks who are over 50, they can make an additional catch-up contribution of $7,500. So for somebody over 50 now, next year they will be able to contribute as much as $30,000 to the TSP, either on a pre-tax or post-tax basis, depending on whether they choose the traditional or the Roth TSP.
So that, when you hear that, you go, wow. And some people might say, where am I going to get the $30,000 to do that? But it's not $30,000 or nothing. It's
right.
Anything you want up to $30,000,
that's right? A statement I make at probably every seminar that I teach at, I always tell them that I think that the smartest thing you can do from either a tax or an investment perspective is put as much money into the TSP as you can afford and as the law allows. Now, if you can afford to max out and still meet your other obligations, by all means, do it. And it amazes me how many people in the federal government will tell me, what else can I do in addition to that? So I get the impression many of the people, at least the ones that are talking to me, are already maxing out. Now, if you can't max out, do the best you can. You put in what you can put in. And if you're blessed, if you're fortunate, if you've managed your finances in such a way so you can set aside the full $30,000 next year, well, God bless you. Do it. It'll, number one, reduce your tax liability. Number two, hopefully increase your retirement nest egg.
Yeah, we've worked with folks early on in our careers when other folks were just joining their careers, and they didn't fully understand the dynamics of getting the money in there and what it's going to be worth 10, 20, 30 years. And initially it was like, oh, you know, if it's so good, why are they letting me do it? And then as time went on and people started to see the growth of the money in that investment, it became very popular. I mean, the thrift, you know, it's a sold-out event almost, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. And, if you simply go online and go to Google and type in TSP, the number of articles you will read about that, it is a retirement plan that is the envy of everybody. It's well-managed. It's low-cost. It's got all the investment options that anybody needs. And the government matching contribution is unbelievable. Now, some private sector companies approach that, but usually for every maybe 2% you put in, you might get a 1% match up to a maximum of 3%. But no, the TSP is a wonderful investment vehicle, which is why I tell people, put as much in as you can. Yeah. Even if you don't get a match, you're still saving taxes. So, and next year you'll be able to save a little bit more. So,
and that's because it goes up with inflation, right?
Well, yeah, that's, I guess the good news is the amount of money you can put aside on a tax-deferred basis is more. That's good because it helps you save taxes. But the reason it's going up is because inflation has been so darn high. And it, you know, it remains to be seen. I don't know whether an announcement has been made as to what the federal pay raise will be next year. But it's probably not going to be as high as the rate of inflation. So the good news is the amount you can deduct for taxes goes up. The bad news is your income may not keep pace with inflation.
Yeah.
So in addition to talking about the additional amount of money you can set aside in the thrift plan, there was the amount you can set aside in an IRA is going to increase next year. The limits are going to go up to $6,500 for folks who are under 50 and $7,000 for those. No, I'm sorry. $7,500 for those who are over 50. So once again, it shows that those deductible amounts, which are tied to inflation, are going to increase. There's a whole variety of other features in the tax code that will change. The tax brackets will be adjusted. You'll have to have more money to be in a higher tax bracket. All of that is as a result of the very high inflation for the past year.
Yeah, people will say before the inflation, well, you know, the deduction doesn't mean as much because it's still a deduction and it's greater than what it was. But now with inflation, the deduction and adjustments, if you will be a greater amount, which is great. I mean, if you can put money aside and get a tax deduction and the deferral of the income until some later date, it just doesn't get much better than that.
That's true. And many people have seen, I've seen that. I looked to try to figure out how much of, I'm old enough now that I got to start taking money out. That's a point that I never thought I would reach. but I got to take money out of my IRA. And in trying to figure out, it's developed into a fairly substantial amount. And I looked to figure out how much I'd put in over all those years, and it's about 1/10. Yeah, my account is worth about 10 times what I put in over all those years. And that just is one indication of how dramatically earnings can grow if they grow on a tax deferred or
This would be true for anybody of any income, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Some of those years, I started putting money in an IRA, I think when it first became available in the early 80s, when you could put in $2,000 a year and deduct it. I did it every year, and I did it at the time because it reduced my tax bill. I was thinking, like any 25-year-old was thinking, I'm never going to be old enough to retire. I can still remember how I used to get irritated. A guy I shared an office with at IRS was in his 50s, and every day he talked about retirement. And I said, for God's sake, Jim, you're only 53 years old. He said, yeah, but I'm going to retire in 2 years. So, and I, of course, being a 25-year-old, figured I'm never going to be that old. Well, lo and behold, I am.
Well,
and then so.
I am too. But I don't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, well.
Andrew said, you better take a break.
Yeah.
So we need to pay attention to Andrew. So let's listen to what WEPA, the good folks that sponsor the show, can do for the listeners.
You've heard about the wage gap, but do you know about the coverage gap? Studies show that only 47% of women have life insurance compared to 58% of men. Plus, women carry less coverage on average. female civilian federal employees, do you need life insurance? Visit WAEPA.org today. WAEPA's online tools can show you how much coverage to consider. WAEPA, offering group term life insurance for feds by feds. Visit WAEPA.org today for more.
WAEPA, for feds by feds.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today listening to the velvet tones of Tom O'Rourke, attorney at law, talking about income taxes. And Tom has a unique ability. Actually, to be fair, you're the one who got me into this.
I remember that.
No,
I remember having to help you get all the tax books out of your car.
I brought down this briefcase full of tax books because I'm with this tax attorney. it was just a great time, and it's been a significant number of years after. We're still buds and enjoy doing the show together and the like. Anyway, yeah. So Tom, where did we leave off?
Well, we left off. We were talking about some of the inflation adjustments that have just been announced for next year, for the 2023 tax year. We talked about the increase in the amount you'll be able to contribute to the TSP and to an IRA, the adjustment of the rate brackets, the adjustment of the standard deduction as one of the things I've noticed, and I've even noticed it in my own personal situation. Back in 2018, the Trump tax bill that made some fairly significant changes that impacted individuals. Two things happened as part of that bill. Number one, there was a limitation placed on certain items that had traditionally been allowable itemized deductions. For example, people were always able to deduct any state and local income taxes they paid. Well, they can still deduct it, but there was a limit imposed of $10,000 per return. Now, for folks who live in a high tax area like D.C. is, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, if you have a two-income couple and they live around here, in all likelihood, the amount of state income taxes alone that they pay was eliminated. So for many people, now the maximum they can claim as a tax deduction is $10,000. For some folks, there was a limit imposed on how much interest you could deduct on mortgage interest, but it's a pretty high limit, and it doesn't apply to people unless their mortgage is more than $750,000.
Yeah,
so it's,
yeah.
You know, most people aren't affected by that. There was a limit on the deductibility of home equity loan interest. When I would buy a new car, I would always finance it by taking out a home equity loan because the interest on the home equity loan was deductible, the interest on the car loan wasn't deductible. Well, starting in 2018, you can no longer do that. You can only deduct home equity loan interest to the extent you use the money to maintain or improve your home.
When you discuss this, you very eloquently do it so that people can understand, you know, a tax deduction versus a tax credit. Right. And, I like the way you did that.
Well, thank you. And then the one entire category of deduction that was completely eliminated was miscellaneous itemized deductions. And miscellaneous itemized deductions included a lot, everything that you could think of. Investment advisory fees, tax preparation costs,
TurboTax.
Union dues.
Yeah.
So none of that's deductible anymore. So in the 2018 Tax Act, Congress took away a lot of deductions, but at the same time, it significantly increased the amount of the standard deduction. And I read an article in the Wall Street Journal that said that now about 90% of all individual taxpayers now claim the standard deduction. That's been the case with me. My state tax deduction is limited. I've lived in my house for a long time, so most of what I'm paying now is principal and not interest. And I find that I'm better off claiming a standard deduction, which is one of the changes that was discussed in the recent inflation adjustment figures. The standard deduction for a married couple is now $27,700. That's almost a $2,000 a year increase.
So help me with this. So somebody just entering the work world, whether they're single or whether they're married, they file a tax return. And better file it. So when they do start, they get to claim this large amount as a standard deduction, even though they don't have a mortgage.
That's right. I mean, it's a gift. It's a gift from Uncle Sam for your friends at the IRS.
And so then, you know, people say, well, I can't get a tax deduction. I go, well, this one gives you more than what you could get if you deducted your mortgage interest, because usually one's first home isn't, you know, palatial. And so it isn't, there's not a ton of interest. And then as time goes on, and as, you know, as your work career goes on, then probably the itemized deductions will become more enforced. But, you know, early out of school, you know, not everybody goes to college, but their first jobs, standard deductions, terrific.
Sure. And it's easy, and you don't need to worry about keeping records or receipts, because it's the amount you're allowed to claim by law. So you don't need to worry about keeping all those receipts for the clothes you donate to the Salvation Army or whoever your charity of choice is.
And that's true for the people that either have rental properties and or maybe a small business. They report the business income minus the business expenses. That's what goes on the tax return.
Sure.
And so it isn't what came in. It's the net profit from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you still claim your standard deduction. And as you said, for many people who have a small business, they have a lot of expenses that are related to their business, which they can still deduct on a different part of your tax return. So.
Yeah. And for people that have a small business, I'm not trying to be an advertising agency for tax preparation, but they need to understand the dynamics of being in that business and what they can and can't deduct. IRS has pamphlets on what you can do, or you can go to maybe a night course or something about understanding taxes for contractors. And I would suggest people do that. And, of course, they can hire a professional to help them with the taxes, but that's not what we're here to do, to advertise
right.
for that. But know your limitations.
Well, that's important, Bob, because way back when I did work with the IRS, many people would try to say, I'm in business. And the reason they would say that is because they would want to deduct expenses related to the business. There was one very prominent tax promoter that said, you can get rich in your spare time. You start your own business and you can deduct everything. If you drive to work, you can listen to our tapes that tell you how to make your business a success. And by doing that, since you're working, you can deduct your commuting expenses.
Ooh.
You can use a room at your home to keep stuff you're going to sell, because it was a multi-level marketing program. So you can deduct the cost of that room. If you also maintain books and records, you can use an office in your home. And people just went hog wild. They deducted virtually every expense they ever had. A couple went out to dinner. The husband and wife were both involved in the business. While they were out of dinner, they discussed the business. They deducted the cost of the business. They would go to meetings of their marketing group, and many times those meetings were in places like Honolulu or Miami. And guess when they held them? February. and they could deduct it. He says, you could deduct everything. Well, the IRS kind of looked askance at that. If you're going to be in a business, number one, it's got to be a legitimate profit-making entity. Number two, occasionally you have to make a profit. As I'm sure you know, there are many people that have said they've been in businesses that never made any money. They raised horses, they sailed yachts, and they say, well, I'm in business. But they never made any money. If you don't make money occasionally, you are inviting the scrutiny of the IRS, and in all likelihood, you're trying to claim the benefit of deductions you're not entitled to, may not be a good idea.
That's true. And I'm certain over the years, not many, but I've probably lost a couple of clients, and I'm aggressive, but not crazy aggressive. So you explain here, you can deduct this, you know, if you can support it for the reason that you're deducting it. If there's no support, and I have a hard time claiming that. And yeah. Somebody might say, well, you know, we came for you to prepare the return. I said, I'll prepare the return and be as aggressive as you like, but I can't prepare it with blinders on as to the third rail.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between being aggressive and being fraudulent. No tax preparer is simply going to make up deductions for you. If somebody says, well, I incurred this $10,000 expense, and you say, well, can I see the backup? And they say, well, just take my word for it, Bob. I wouldn't mislead you. Most tax preparers are going to say, I'm sorry. I can't put my name on a return because, as I'm sure you know, there have been a whole series of tax preparer penalties that are implemented that if you're dealing with professionals, their ability to continue practicing their profession depends on them being honest in what they do.
So. I had an audit once, and this is for the listeners, just not Tom and I talking, but I had an audit, maybe it was 10 years ago, and it was a realtor. Now, realtors, they are out to sell property. They incur expenses. Certainly the easy stuff, travel and whatnot, but they attend educational courses, they have open houses and whatnot. And this fairly successful realtor and a really tough IRS agent. And I knew before I went in, so I came in, there were different color photocopy papers and whatnot. And there were a lot of expenses for open houses. And so I can't allow this. How do I know? And I said, well, when realtors have open houses, they have you sign in. And I said, but if you look at who signed in, it was Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. They're not going to put their names down because they don't want the realtors to call them. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you got to, you can't deduct that. And I said, let me ask you a question. And she was getting mad at me at this point. And I said, do you ever go shopping on the weekends? And she goes, what do you want? I said, do you do or don't you? She goes, yes. And I said, do you ever go to the food court? Yeah. I said, when they come around with a plate of chicken with toothpicks, do you ever pick one up and eat it? She goes, yeah. I said, did you give them your name?
And how did the audit turn out?
Actually, I think we got a great respect for one another. She was going to bloom, and I was, I rarely get mad. Yeah. But I just said, you know, this is reasonable. You know, maybe everybody doesn't put their name on the log when they go there. The Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck are on there, but not the names of the people. I said, but these people don't spend the money just to buy the food to eat at home. Yeah. Anyway, so what I'm getting back at without going through all this goofiness, if you're in business, anything reasonable to further your business or just to maintain it would be deductible.
Sure.
But don't get crazy with it.
No, I agree completely. And that's usually, if I heard it once, I heard it a million times when I was an IRS agent. I forgot what I was going to say. It's about hogs getting slaughtered.
Yeah.
If people who aren't reasonable. Every IRS agent I've ever dealt with is usually a very reasonable person, and they're not out to get the last dollar. They certainly understand, perhaps better than anybody, that there are a lot of provisions in the tax code that are incomprehensible for many people to understand. So if you're reasonable, in all likelihood, you're going to prevail.
We both had more than a few. I can't say that I ever had really. I've had some, you know, tough ones, but I don't ever remember one being particularly onerous. There was one time I believe I said, "Listen, because you have the ability, and folks, not to teach about audits. Hope you never have one. But if you are audited, you can appeal it." You can go up to the group supervisor. So it isn't like it's the final one. So let's hope you never get audited. And the incidence of audit is pretty small right now. So
yeah, it's extremely small. May or may not change in the future. But IRS will continue to administer the tax code. And as part of that obligation to administer the tax code, They adjust many things on an annual basis, and that adjustment is based strictly on inflation. So those all those inflation adjustments, apparently all of the data available to make those adjustments is now in, and the various tax preparation services have produced the figures that I've been discussing here today. And one matter I noticed, it's something that's come to my attention in recent years, is the adjustment of how much people can set aside into a health savings account. And until the last several years, I really hadn't heard much about health savings account. I thought they were something that was only available to very limited numbers of people. I know they're available to federal employees. And a health savings account is something that you, as an individual employee, may want to consider. Now, it's important to consider it now. It's too late to do anything for 2022, but the health insurance open season will be coming up fairly soon. I think it's usually in October, November, right. December. Mm-hmm. And at that point, all federal employees and federal retirees have the option of choosing from among 30-plus plans. Now, the health savings account is not available to retirees. It's only available to current employees. But if you're enrolled in a health savings account, you can claim a tax deduction, again, not a credit, but a deduction, next year of as much as $7,750, or if you're over 50, as much as $8,750. And for many taxpayers, that results in a savings of taxes of about $2,500 a year. So it can be a very significant tax-saving opportunity. Now, but there is a catch. Number one, the catch is you've got to be enrolled in a high-deductible health insurance plan. And high-deductible means a deductible of at least $1,500. So in other words, you got to shell out $1,500 before your insurance company is going to repay you anything. But a collateral part of that high deductible plan is your ability to put money into a health savings account. It's fully deductible. It grows tax-free. Any earnings on that account grow from year to year to year, and they aren't subject to tax. So it is a way to generate a substantial nest egg. And what caught my attention when I was looking for a health savings account, I just went on Google and typed in health savings account, and I stumbled across an article in Kiplinger's magazine, and the article was, young professionals can avoid six figures in lifetime taxes with an HSA. And your listeners can find the very same article. You may want to take a look at it because it tells you, number one, it produces an immediate tax benefit. Number two, it grows tax-free. Now, usually the people for whom it makes sense to invest in a health savings account are people who are pretty healthy, people who don't incur a lot of expenses, which mainly translates into younger people. For those of you, I've had this discussion with my son. He's young, he's healthy, he has health insurance, but he almost never uses it. You know, he goes maybe once a year, he goes to have his eyes tested. So you can set aside money and it can continue to grow tax-free, and you really can use it as a way to save for something I hope never happens. You hope you never have to go into a nursing home. But if you do, you can have your own tax-free nest egg to pay those expenses. But it's something to look at and something for your listeners to at least think about.
Well, this is a great time then for a break so the listeners can cogitate on what you just told us.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial, transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Are you at the mid-career stage of your federal career, or do you plan to retire in the next 5 years and wonder if you are prepared for retirement? No matter what career stage you are, it's never too early to dot the I's and cross the T's. NITP now offers online open enrollment training to help you understand your federal benefits package and financial planning options with tips and tools to plan and fine-tune your retirement planning goals. Visit NITPinc.com to download the current brochure and calendar.
Welcome back to the final leg of For Your Benefit, September 26, 2022. We're here with Tom O'Rourke, attorney at law, tax attorney at law. I said this at the beginning of the show, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you.
Is that good or bad?
No, it's not good. It's fabulous.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome.
Anyway, Tom. So more of your velvet tones here on tax savings ideas for our listeners.
Well, I thought it was important to mention health savings accounts for two reasons. Number one, it's a very frequently overlooked tax benefit. A lot of people, when I mention it, say, well, I already got health insurance. Well, this is sort of a health insurance with an added benefit. The added benefit is the ability to set aside money tax-free, and to allow that money to grow. But it's not for everybody. I mention it because for those of you who are, you're all going to be choosing health insurance in the reasonably near future when the open season comes upon us. When you do, you may want to take an extra look at the high deductible health insurance plan because that's the absolute precondition to enrolling in a health savings account. So as you're looking at your healthcare needs, think about this as a tool that number one allows you to meet those needs, but number two also reduces your tax liability. Now a couple words of caution. Number one, these are only available to you while you're an active federal employee. They're only available to you until you reach age 65, because once you become eligible for Medicare, which you do at age 65, you're no longer eligible to put aside money in a health savings account. If you have a pre-existing account, you can keep it, but you can't contribute any more to it after you reach age 65.
So bottom line, I can have a health savings account. I can have an IRA. If I have some self-employed income, I can have some type of... So there are different ways to fund these. They all go eventually to the same pot that they grow tax deferred until some later date.
Yeah, absolutely right. And what I found, what I was, every time I go on the internet, I'm amazed at how many people have written articles about a whole variety of topics. But this in particular, for people who want to learn more about this, go on to Google and type in health savings account. You'll find something like 10 million articles. You may want to focus on articles from publications that are known to be reliable, financial periodicals. The one I found was in Kiplinger's. Kiplinger's is an organization that publishes articles on financial topics and has done that for many years. So,
okay. So, Tom, when meeting with people, federal employees in particular, because that's who we deal with. What do you find that maybe sometimes surprises you with what they're not aware of? And on the reverse side of that, sometimes they understand that, but they want to go to the next level. But can they? I mean, if their income is pretty much federal salaries, there's only so much you can do as far as tax deductions go.
Right.
And maybe if they have a side business, which, you know, most people don't. But if they do, that's where some of these other things come in. But if an individual, say, was a federal employee and they know these opportunities plus what you talked about today, if they did any moonlighting so that they wouldn't be subject to any kind of restrictions in their employment agreement. Self-employed business, the revenues come in. You have to report that as income, of course. And then the business expenses. Now, usually the business expenses aren't particularly high. You don't need a suite of offices, and you don't need this and that. You might need an office in the home, maybe a nicer computer, et cetera. Then you got some other overhead expenses. But it's, you know, it's somewhat highly profitable in the sense that dollars in versus expenses going out, the expenses going out are really small relative to the money coming in. So from an economic position, great growth. From a tax position, it's even better because you can defer the income on them till they hit whatever age.
Well, and the tax-deferred plans that are available to self-employment individuals offer some very generous ability to set aside money. I think next year, I'm not positive about the exact number, but the amount a self-employed individual could set aside in their own profit-sharing plan is going to be around $60,000 a year. So that's money you can earn for yourself. You can set it aside. You don't have to pay taxes on it because it's all fully deductible, and it grows tax deferred.
But what if I don't have that? What if I only have 10 instead of 60?
Then you set aside 10.
Really?
You set aside whatever you can. And I'll tell you, the group of individuals for whom I find is a very useful tool are folks who are retired and then pursue a second career. There are a lot of folks in the federal government that possess highly marketable skills. And they will find that there are people looking to hire folks with their skill set. Or they more likely will consult independently. Somebody will say, well, you know, I don't want to work for a paycheck. If I want to go on a trip with my wife, I want to do it, but I'll consult with you. And by doing that, they'll earn money, they'll be self-employed, and they've managed their finances in such a way so that their retirement annuity and possibly their Social Security will be enough to live on. And whatever they make from their business is just kind of fund money that they can set aside. So there are a variety of options for folks, and I know in the seminars that NITP presents, you always have a section on what do you do after you retire, and it covers a variety of topics. But one of them is you may simply want to go back to work. Now, probably more frequently, you just might want to have fun. Nothing wrong with that. Unfortunately, by just having fun is probably not going to produce a tax deduction for you. But Bob, one thing I would like to at least briefly mention is an issue. In addition to tax planning, I also do a lot of estate planning. And for some people, taxes and estate planning are related. And when you were asking me what kind of questions do you get, the most common comment I get from federal employees coming in to see me about estate planning, Tom, I'm a federal employee. I don't have an estate. And I always try to disabuse them of that notion. If you're a federal employee and you haven't put a dime in the TSP, at least you're going to be entitled to an annuity when you retire. And that annuity is going to provide you a stream of income for life. And many times the present value of that annuity is into seven figures. It's frequently over $1 million.
So an annuity sounds, you know, I won't say exotic, an annuity, but it's a savings vehicle.
Absolutely.
That defers whatever money you put into it. Correct me if I'm wrong. When you put it in, you may or may not get a tax deduction.
Right.
But once it's in there, there's no taxes on the earnings generated in that, whether you're a whiz kid on Wall Street or whether you're CD rates, whatever it is,
it's
no tax until it.
Until you pull it out. And for federal employees, the annuity all federal employees are familiar with is the one that there's a deduction from their paycheck every 2 weeks when they get paid. It's either CSRS or FERS, depending on your retirement system. That money comes out of your salary. You don't get a tax deduction for it, but The promise Uncle Sam makes you is if you work for us until you qualify for that annuity, many times you've got to have at least 30 years of service, you will get an annuity for the rest of your life. It's a stream of income which never runs out. It only ends when you die. And if you live to be 150, you're going to get an annuity every year. And oh, by the way, that annuity is adjusted for inflation. It increases every year along with the rate of inflation. Now, I know folks that are covered by FERS, the amount of the increase is limited a little bit, but you still get a cost of living allowance. And the ability to collect that annuity that you paid for during the period of your federal service is a wonderful benefit. And oftentimes what I find in dealing with federal employees, to the extent they have something that's worth a lot of money, it's usually in the thrift savings plan. Since TSP has been in existence now for over 30 years, and many people have diligently invested. And I know when Mike Causey writes his column, he frequently writes a column about TSP millionaires. He hadn't been writing it too often recently because the number of millionaires has been decreasing with the stock market. But having said that, there's still a lot of employees that have a very substantial nest egg. And that was always a big part of their estate plan. And until 2020 or 2019, that nest egg would not only support them, but also their family members for the rest of their lives. When you die, any money you have in a tax-deferred account will always pass on to whomever you've designated as a beneficiary. And then when they withdraw money, they pay taxes on it. And until 2020, people used to be able to take advantage of something called a stretch IRA or an inherited IRA. It was an IRA when you died, you federal employee, you leave your $1 million TSP account to a trust for the benefit of your three-year-old grandchild. That money would then be withdrawn from the tax-deferred account over the lifetime of the beneficiary. And for a three-year-old, that lifetime would be 70-plus years.
Yeah.
So that money is growing tax-deferred every year for 70-plus years. Well, all good things must come to an end. And Congress passed the Secure Act, and it did a lot of things that benefited people. But one of the things that it did was it eliminated the ability to use the stretch IRA. That's a very long way of leading into what I really wanted to say. Within the last 2 weeks, the IRS issued regulations regarding taking money out of an inherited IRA, when you have to do it, and how it'll be taxed. Well, how it'll be taxed is easy. It'll be taxed as ordinary income to the person who inherits the money when they get it.
So ordinary income, even though it may have come from capital gains and dividends and stuff like that, when it comes out, it's 100% taxed.
Ain't no such thing as a capital gain coming out of a tax-qualified plan.
Okay, one other comment. CSRS and CSRS offset individuals who do not owe a redeposit can set up something called a voluntary contribution plan. Now, there's probably not a whole lot of people listening, but if you know any CSRSers in your FERS, tell them about this. It's called a voluntary contribution program, and they can put up to 10% of their lifetime earnings into the voluntary contribution program, federal plan, and a millisecond or two later, they transfer to a Roth IRA. Am I right, Tom?
You are absolutely right. And I mean, obviously, many people who work for the federal government for a long time, their earnings are in excess of $1 million. So 10% of that is $100,000. So we're talking about a lot of money. And most folks just don't have $100,000 laying around
anything,
in
right?
pocket change.
Yeah.
But where I see it all the time is people who receive an inheritance. A family member dies, individual receives an inheritance. And the individual, the beneficiary says, you know, I got this windfall. I really don't have any crying need to spend it. Is there some place wise that I can invest it and minimize taxes? Well, a voluntary contribution account is an answer to that person's prayers. It allows them to invest the money. They put it in a government-guaranteed interest-bearing account. Now, interest rates, I'm sure, are going up now, but I'm not sure what they are. But it grows tax-free. And it amazes me how quickly money grows when it's not subject to tax every year.
Boy, this is an education on taxes and finance, huh?
Yeah. Well, many times they go hand in hand because one of the things I always, at every class I teach at, you want to avoid taxes? I got the ultimate shelter for you. In fact, I used to write it down, the ultimate shelter. And somebody would come in late, what's that ultimate shelter you're talking about? And I say, it's real easy. Don't make any money. And people say, yeah, bad joke. But clearly there is a relationship between taxes and finances. And you always have finances in the back of your mind when you're doing any tax planning. Never make a decision that'll save you taxes but be detrimental to your financial situation. So, you want to save taxes? Lose money. It's easy.
All right. Not so smart,
but it's easy.
Andrew tells us we got 2 minutes left.
Okay. I just want to say a couple
1 minute left.
I just want to say one more thing about now, as a result of the Secure Act, you generally have to pull money out of an inherited tax-deferred account within 10 years of the date of death of the person from whom you inherited. That's what the regulations that were issued in the last 2 weeks talk about. They go into a lot more detail, and they talk about the law as it applies to withdrawing money from tax-deferred, any tax-deferred account, IRAs, DSP, whatever.
Okay, Tom, I've done you a horrible disservice. How does somebody contact you?
Well, I'll give them my email, Bob, but I'm not taking any more clients. I'm retiring from the practice of law, but my email is t.o'rourke, O-R-O-U-R-K-E, at milesstockbridge, two words, jammed together, .com.
All righty, Tom. Harken back to the first day we ever did a radio show on air many, many years ago, and it's been a true pleasure, and we'll continue doing it.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Just because I'm retiring, I still plan to be around and hopefully continue to do stuff like this in the future.
I hope so, too. And we thank Andrew, the best engineer in the radio industry. And thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.